have to be a mailing address.
So, I don't know what the situation is in Buena Park, but I should think they should keep at least abreast of those federal voting.
Yeah, they certainly, I'm sure they should. Of course, we give them our church address. We have many people. Well, that's one of the other things that we require the people. If they stay with us, we require that they register to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And we let them use our address.
But you don't tell them how to vote, do you?
We tell them how to vote. We don't even make them vote. We just make them register because we figure if we force them to register, then they'll go vote.
Huh.
And the other thing, of course, is here in the Buena Park area is that they have the no camping laws and those kind of things. And interestingly enough, here in the Buena Park area, in the Orange County area, we have had two cases in the last 3 or 4 months where homeless men, two different individual cases, where homeless men were arrested for urban camping and convicted.
Huh.
And they appealed the case.
Right.
And the appellate division of Orange County overturned both those cases.
Do you know the names of the cases?
One of them is the Icorn case.
Oh, yes.
And I don't remember the name of the other one.
Of course, the Icorn case is we actually were very pleased to hear, very significant, because they ruled that the reason that the Icorn case was overturned was because the judge failed to allow the necessity defense.
Exactly, and that there was another case similar, and that of course is why I was convicted, and we're hoping that our case is going to be number 3. I'm not homeless, but I was convicted for helping the homeless. And the way I was convicted, in fact, I just had dinner with one of my jurors a little while ago, who's a now active member in my church.
Mm-hmm.
And two of the jury members that found me guilty are active in my church now.
But only active after the trial, right? They joined up.
Because they said at the trial, you know, that they had no choice based on the judge's direction, because the judge said, you cannot judge the law, you cannot judge his motive, you can only judge, did he break the law?
And the law that you were accused
of? Denied breaking the law.
You were accused of breaking a zoning...
No, I was accused of breaking a city administrative code which says if you allow people to sleep in their automobiles on your private property, you can be held accountable.
And as I recall, you were sentenced to a heap of community service, and then the judge said, but you've done all that community service already, it's all...
Correct. I was given 1,500 hours of community service.
Mm-hmm.
And also 3 years probation.
Now, my understanding was the Icorn case came out of Santa Ana. I mean, we're not talking...
That's correct. That's just down the street from us.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And the other was in this same area.
Mm-hmm.
And an interesting case recently we had, we don't know what's going to happen with this guy, but the Sheriff's Department of Orange County was passing out sleeping bags to the homeless.
My goodness. That's good news.
And the article in the paper was talking about the fact that the homeless people weren't sure they trusted them. They thought maybe they were being entrapped.
Uh-huh.
And,
implements of the crime.
But they work. We have an excellent sheriff here in Orange County now. We have a new man. His name is Mike Corona. And he said that the sheriff's department had all these extra sleeping bags that had been given to them by El Toro and some other military things. It was very heavy duty, excellent. And he said they had no need for them, so why not give them to homeless people? He's been criticized because here he is the head law officer in the county, giving people sleeping bags, and yet the laws on the books say you can be arrested for urban camping.
Mm-hmm.
And but he's taking a lot of flack for it, but he's standing up.
So the sheriff is that, you're talking about the county sheriff, whereas the city chief of police is, I think you have a far lower opinion of, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the lower opinion is very well deserved because of his total stand and what he's done. And even a week ago in city council, the mayor of Buena Park was talking about the fact that they must uphold, they had a gentleman that they brought before the city council because he had not gotten a permit to do an expansion of his home. And the mayor made the comment that we have to enforce the ordinances and the laws, and we go after everybody. In fact, we even went after a church, he said.
Uh-huh.
Talking about going after us. But what he failed to say, and I'm going to go back to city council next week to make sure that it's on the record, what he failed to tell them is that 6 of the charges that were brought against me indeed were for not having permits. But someone in the city called me and said, Pastor Drake, if you want to find those permits, you can find them. And he gave me the microfiche number, and they found them.
That was your deep throat inside the city.
And then they had to drop those 6 charges because we had gotten permits on all that stuff.
So you were found guilty of compassion without official bureaucratic approval.
That's exactly right. In fact, the four things that I was found guilty of, one of them was not kicking people out of the parking lot, sleeping in their car, and the other three had to do with changing the use of a building without official approval. The building didn't have to be, you know, re-equipped or anything. We just did it without approval. In fact, we now have approval in that very building, that infamous patio structure, to store and pass out food. And we're doing it legally now. But I was charged criminally because I did not get permission to do it. But I didn't know I had to get permission.
And you were also subject to subsequent harassment for, well, they wanted to make sure you kept within the 52 people they allowed to sleep in that building. Is that right?
That's correct. They put us on probation. And during just 3 years, we're only allowed to have 52 people in that building. And then somebody that we had kicked out complained and told the police that we were hiding people inside our church sanctuary.
They
came and said, we want to check the church sanctuary for clandestinely hidden sleepers.
Those criminal dogs.
Criminals that were sleeping, you know.
Yeah, sleeping.
And I said, well, even if we were, I still wouldn't let you in the sanctuary, but I'm telling you we're not. If you can't take my word for it, that's too bad. I'm not opening my sanctuary.
And a judge in January upheld your sense of the religious separation there that allowed you to maintain the sanctuary. But then a second judge, I guess, looking at this lawsuit that you had filed against the city, gave them the right to come in and what? And take photographs of the area?
They had to take photographs because they felt it was pertinent to the defense in their case.
And this is something I don't quite understand. They are claiming that the man who was arrested, again, what is his name?
His name was Clewell, and here's what they're claiming.
Okay.
After 11 hours of interrogation by the police department, they gave him a choice.
This is for the crime of not registering.
For the crime of not registering, that's
right.
Mm-hmm. But they gave him a choice because I was waiting in the lobby of the police station to visit him, and they gave him a choice, and we have this on tape. They gave him a choice. You can either meet with Pastor Drake, your pastor, or you can go back to the church and get your belongings. Which one do you want to do? And he has said in his own deposition that he wanted to meet with me, but that he didn't want to lose his stuff, and so he chose to go back to the church to get his belongings.
Mm-hmm.
And they took him back to the church. They didn't call us, they didn't ask us, they didn't get a warrant. They just showed up at the church with him in handcuffs and said, we want to get his belongings.
And this was the pretext for, in essence, they simply wanted to get into the church to get more evidence against...
against me and the church.
Uh-huh.
They even admitted that. They said they were investigating for other crimes.
And
they say that the reason they have a right to come into the church is because he had the right as a homeless person sleeping there.
So they were piggybacking on him after having coerced him through a 10-hour interrogation session?
Right. And they have a right to come in to the church to investigate because he controlled his bunk area.
Mm-hmm.
It would be simply that this. Let's say you invite someone to stay in your home, and they're in a bedroom in your home. And while you're away from home, the police come and knock at the door, and they want to come in, and this person says, sure, come on in. You can inspect anything in this house. And they find something illegal in your house, and later, you know, you would say, well, you didn't have a right to search my house. You had no reasonable cause. Well, this guy gave us permission because he controlled that bedroom.
Are they claiming they found something illegal?
Beg your pardon?
Are they claiming they found something illegal?
They never did find anything.
So, and your lawsuit is, obviously, they're claiming that they had probable cause or that they're...
They're claiming that they had a right to go in because he granted them the right.
Well, why would that have anything to do with their being allowed back on Monday to take more photos? What relevance could photos have to this situation?
Well, it was the place where he was sleeping. And they're going to say, here's a picture of the place where he was sleeping. And we're saying, it's really not relevant, to be honest.
I don't think so.
He's saying that, that they're saying, this is the area where Clewell was sleeping. This is the area we went into.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, we had permission to go in.
So you had three television networks out here photographing this whole
right.
circus on Monday, or
right?
Mm-hmm. I hope this is rounding up donations for you, Wiley. Is it?
Well, this time it's been interesting. Always before, anytime we're on television, we have gotten quite a few phone calls. We've only gotten two or three as a result of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it's like everything else, you know, there's, we've had a lot of big tornadoes in Littleton and all this other stuff, and so it's one of those kind of things where it really gets low on the totem pole as far as...
All that NATO bombing of civilian buses is pushing you off the front pages.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And Kosovo and Clinton and all of that is pushing us down, so...
Well, you got to get Monica Lewinsky in there, then maybe you can get going.
Maybe we could provide her a place to stay for a while if she comes to L.A.
Hey, who knows? Maybe she do some social work in the church. So does this look like the end of harassment for the moment, or do you foresee more in the weeks ahead?
Well, it obviously won't let up, because obviously they're going to be mad because the media covered this. They get angry because they say, I won't do it privately. And I told them from the beginning that if they fought us, that I had no choice. They have the money, they have the attorneys. I had no choice but to go to the freedom of the press, fight our battles there. And they get very angry because the press makes them look stupid.
Well, there are some who say that you are a major publicity hound. However, there are some who say the same about me. And I find publicity for certain causes is a tonic against police abuse, and hopefully for public awareness on some issues.
Well, I've said very clearly that if an individual homeowner had done to them what has been done to us at our church, they would be up in arms, they would be hollering at the news media, they would be talking to any TV camera they could talk to, and yet this is a church, and as far as I know, never in the history of the United States of America has any church been forced to send a list of the people that were at its church to the local police department, yet we had to do that.
Hey, if you have nothing to hide, you will send a list of the names.
That's right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been very cooperative with the police. Many of the policemen are very fine policemen and do an excellent job, but it's just a small few of the Gestapo,
mm-hmm.
And the Gestapo is headed up by Herr Tiefenk, T-E-F-A-N-K.
That's the police chief of Buena Park.
That's the police chief of Buena Park.
But we're talking to one of the police chief's prime nemeses here, Wiley Drake. Wiley has been housing homeless people in his church and been taking flack for it and not been backing down. Is there anything more you want to say, Wiley?
Well, just simply to say that if anybody out there is doing the same thing we're doing and helping the homeless and helping the poor, just hang in there. You know, justice will prevail, and we will prevail in this, and we'll get, even though I'm not embarrassed by the fact that I have a criminal record, in fact, I think it's sort of a badge of...
Badge of honor.
Badge of honor. You know, I sort of... You know, very humbly put myself in the line with other people who've gone to jail for helping people, and we're still helping people. We're helping more people now than we ever have. The police chief, the city manager, and the city said almost 2 years ago, you must quit doing what you're doing. We refuse to quit. We're helping more people now than we've ever helped. We have more people there tonight than we've ever had at any night, and we're going to continue to do that. And if they want to give us more publicity, so be it.
Well, maybe we'll invite you up here when we begin our series of sleep-out protests in order to end our city's sleeping ban.
Great.
You can speak to us, and you can put down your sleeping bag next to mine if you want.
Love to do that.
Hey, Wiley, thank you for getting back to us, and keep us advised if you have anything you can fax us on this.
Hey, there's a couple little articles in the paper we'll fax up to you and keep you posted.
Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on the city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles. of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon, you and me.
And that was Wiley Drake, that last interview. Wiley gave me a kind of an update to the update later. He goes to court on May 12th on a city motion in Buena Park for summary judgment and lawyer's fees to stop his civil rights suit against the police department in the city. If they get that judgment, and if it's not overturned on appeal, if they're able to stop him, in other words, from doing his civil rights suit, his church will be bankrupt, he said, because the city has spent $200,000 to $300,000 in legal fees opposing him. And if you're interested in more information about that or you want to support Wiley Drake, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's our off-air number here, not Free Radio's off-air number, but my off-air number. And I'd be able to give you more information. But if you want to talk on air, give a call to 427-3772. That's our on-air Free Radio phone number, and we are here with lines open if you want to talk. The agenda is kind of full tonight in terms of things happening around town. As I may have mentioned before, I think I did, the war in Yugoslavia is a subject of organizing at Vets Hall, even as I speak, room 23. They're working on different ways to get the issue out to the public, past the sort of the media white noise blasts that seems to be covering every one of NATO's most recent little military adventures. They aren't little, actually. The pace of the air war is rising in intensity. The civilian casualties from the air are rising. The refugee totals are rising. The costs in terms of just money, for those of you who are interested in that, all you Republicans out there, are rising. And hopefully the Santa Cruz activist community will also get up there and start rising and stand up and say, stop the bombing, as we did in by the hundreds, even by the thousands during the Iraqi war and back in 1970. We flooded the freeways. And now, of course, you got, 20 people with candles at the town clock, or 30 or 40 people. Not that I don't commend Women's International League for Peace and Freedom for doing that every Friday and Monday at 5:15, and I urge you to join them. But we need more people out there. If you want to help out, call the Santa Cruz Coalition to Stop the Bombing at 423-1448. 423-1448. That's the Santa Cruz Coalition to Stop the Bombing. Also, if you're a couch potato or just not leaving your home this evening and happen to be fortunate enough to have community television, there's a Voices from the Village show, especially long, an hour and a half long tonight. Starts at 7:30, goes till 9. The War in Yugoslavia on Channel 71, a call-in panel discussion with Bill Monig, Constantine Dinopoulos, and I believe a third person who I'm not sure what his name is. And if you want to call into that, Voices from the Village show, starting at 7:30 tonight on Channel 71, community television. Phone number is 425-4920 for Voices from the Village. Vets Hall, as I say, if you want to help really organize some significant protests, some forums, some educational activity, some action to stop the war. Now, does that sound familiar? It's unfortunately got a very familiar ring to it. A couple of updates before we go any further. I got a call from Arlen of Operation Homeless. He's been plaguing the Board of Supervisors, trying to get some kind of additional funding, either for the armory or an additional shelter for homeless people in the county, to no avail. Marty Wormhout doesn't seem to be too active on that issue, or any of her more conservative colleagues. He's still working on it, and so keep up the good work, Arlen. I'm glad somebody's in there pestering the bureaucrats and the authorities in a way that I find too tedious to continue. Arlen is sort of a true believer that if you're polite long enough and you knock long enough, that somebody's going to come to the door. That can be true, but it can also lead to some pretty sore knuckles and sort of, finding a skeleton by the door in a few years as you die of old age waiting for some kind of response. By the way, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and this is Civil Rights for the Poor, or Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. A bathrobe, as in, you know, the thing you wear at night. A Robespierre, as in the French revolutionary figure who stood up for the people in 1793, and then got too carried away and too centralized in his craziness and started guillotining too many in the wrong times and then got guillotined himself. Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. We're concerned about, not about guillotining people, but about guillotining injustice. We want to get rid of not the human beings here, but the injustice in, that makes puts homeless people in a position, for example, where they have to be arrested for sleeping at night or fear such arrest, makes puts women in a position where they sleep unsafely. I got an anonymous report which from a trusted source, an old-time activist who didn't want to be publicly identified on the radio, but he reported another troll busting, that is to say sport beating of homeless people, on April 15th. And he's looking for anybody out there who has been beaten. Please give a call to 423-HUFF. He wants to meet with them confidentially to go to the DA's office and talk about those issues, looking essentially for some skinheads who are doing the beating. The police, he says, are not operational, not active on this issue. Big surprise. But, yeah, I think that's a good idea. So, again, if you have information on troll busting, or if you've gotten your campsite raided, if police have harassed you for sleeping, as they harassed Lou Rice, for instance, the other day, the man who was fasting in front of the post office for better conditions at the Homeless Services Center, also give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or call me on air now, and let's talk about it before the general public, before the listeners of Santa Cruz, at 427-3772. Well, today is Orson Welles' birthday for all of you media buffs and Citizen Kane fans. It's also the birthday of Martin Robinson Delaney, who's a black emancipationist from the 19th century. And there's a good reason for you to go to the library and read about him. I hadn't heard about him before, and perhaps I'll look into him. Today is also Sigmund Freud's birthday for all you Freudy cats. And it's also the day when Henry David Thoreau died. He was, of course, wrote the fine work on civil disobedience, and he's the man who, when his friend Emerson, the poet, came to him as Thoreau sat in jail for refusing to pay taxes for the Mexican-American War. I think he only spent one night in jail, but he was in jail, and it was a sort of a symbolic thing. Emerson looked at him and through the bars and said, "Henry, what are you doing in there?" And at which point Thoreau turned to Emerson, looked through the bars, and said to him, "Waldo, what are you doing out there?" And that one always gives me a little chill in the back of my neck when I remember it. And here we are, as thousands of people are dying in Yugoslavia, as the entire country is being bombed back to the Stone Age, bridges, power plants, civilians. And we are going about our business. Well, part of our business has to be ending that war. So I encourage everyone to give a call to Santa Cruz Coalition to Stop the Bombing at 423-1448. Talk to Isaiah, volunteer your services. Or tune in tonight to Voices from the Village, 730, Channel 71. Or going down to the Vets Hall tonight, Room 23, to help organize protests against this. They're going to be meeting there, I think, till 9 o'clock. And it was quite a vigorous meeting a week ago when we met in Loudon Nelson with the same group. People were actually doing things and organizing, and I haven't seen much of the fruits of that yet, but I have my hopes. Sounds like we actually have an incoming phone call.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Robert North, how are you?
Ooh, sounds like Bob LaMonica to me.
Sure is. Hi, Robert. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good. What's the word?
Well, I'm always intrigued by the current event topic of reality of the Santa Cruz Action Network.
Oh dear. Some scan beating us, some scan bashing again here?
Well, scan bashing. As I have stated before, if somebody wants to be a member of scan, I mean, you know, go ahead. But if you look at the history of the serious issues in Santa Cruz County, going back to the mid-80s, you don't see the Santa Cruz Action Network there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I know that you've been, when we last talked, we're talking about a trio of voter petitions around a pedestrian mall, rent control, and the sleeping ban. Any more action on that? Or
rent control was filed last Friday.
Uh-huh.
April 30th, with three proponents, Linda LeMaster, David Silva, and myself.
And what, can you tell us what that is, that petition?
Well, there will be a rent control advisory measure out shortly. In fact, I could it's really just one sentence. Shall the Santa Cruz City Council provide for a rent stabilization board to be initially appointed by the City Council and thereafter elected by the city voters, empowering the board to regulate residential rents?
Mm. How does this deal with Hawkins Costa?
Well, that is vacancy decontrol. That is state law. So any rent control measures past or present would have to absorb that. The fact is that when a rent controlled apartment is vacated, then the landlord can raise it to market rates.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that the Santa Cruz Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, which for all you poor tenants out there that are getting hassled, or enlightened landlords who want to be a part of a struggle to protect the rights of tenants, you can reach TRUSC, as they call themselves, at 426-0644. We may actually try to get an update from TRUSC later in the show. They were talking about trying to get the City Council and the Board of Supervisors to pass renter protections, a kind of a bill of rights for renters. Have you talked to them about that, Bob?
Yeah, and good luck. You know, rent control as an issue is extremely important in the context with Santa Cruz economic reality 1999. And given the reality of vacancy decontrol, it doesn't remove one iota power and the potential power of rent control.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the fact of the matter is that the housing industry has shown itself to be incapable, in my opinion, of self-regulation. Hence, regulation becomes justifiable, just like it's justifiable with the timber industry, like it's justifiable with public utilities. Virtually every industry is regulated. There's absolutely zero reason why rents, particularly in the reality of Santa Cruz in 1999, should not be regulated.
You're not going to get an argument from me. You know, Bob, I've got this tape here, which is actually about 2 weeks old, in which I interviewed SCAN co-chair Skip Spitzer. I mentioned it earlier in the year.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to suggest we do here is I'm going to try to play this now after another announcement or two, and then I suggest you call back with your comments.
Oh, I certainly will, and thank you, Robert. And I would just drop this quickly onto the audience. Going back to the mid-'80s, any honest citizen of Santa Cruz County that wants to look at the DEN or DA office disaster beginning in the mid-'80s, one has to question, where was the Santa Cruz Action Network? And where is the Santa Cruz Action Network?
Well, I won't report this to Judge Danner tonight, your comments. But, yeah, I will await your next call, Bob.
It is a scandal in and of itself that Art Danner is a judge.
A scandal? Are you making a pun there, Bob?
It's a scandal in and of itself.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much. I will call back after Mr. Spitzer's comments,
okay,
if it's okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
And that's the man I call Battling Bob LaMonica. He's been fighting for many a moon, trying to rein in irresponsibility, corruption, just plain bad DAism in the DA's office. And I don't know what we got now, Ron Ruiz. It's hard to tell. It doesn't look terribly good to me, but I'm not in an informed position. A couple of quick announcements. Interesting-looking flyer here in the studio. Scofflaw's Union Local 13 apparently is forming. Organize in solidarity with fellow bicyclists to fight ticketing for petty traffic offenses. And it's really long overdue to have this. I was glad to see at the Tuesday night forum, the City Council Civic Forum, people talking about this massive police overkill. We've got an incoming call. We'll interrupt this for the call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, Robert, this is Mr. T.
Go ahead.
And I'd like to say about a scam.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a big scam ripoff.
Okay. Why is that?
Because they don't do anything for some of the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, they certainly elected almost every victorious city council member in the last two decades. I guess we might call that doing something against the people.
Right.
Although,
very true, Robert.
Uh-huh.
And I feel that, you know, these politicians, I know Art Danner real well, the former DA,
no sympathy for the attacks on people around the drug war, and Danner's attacks on homeless activists in the last decade have not been pretty to watch either.
Right.
So I agree with that.
Yeah. And Robert, I tell you, you know, the politician better stand up and take notice or they can be turned out of office.
Well, you know, I think we need to show up in numbers on the streets to really take notice, and maybe that'll happen as we rise and protest the war.
Sure. And what's the number for that stop the bombing?
The number for the Santa Cruz Coalition to Stop the Bombing is 423-1448.
Okay, 423-1448. Oh, okay, 1448. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Robert, I'll get back with you.
Okay.
Yeah, Scofflaw's Union Local 13, to organize in solidarity with fellow bicyclists fighting this really institutionalized racket we have downtown of cops ticketing people for going the wrong way on their bikes, or riding their bikes on the sidewalk, or sitting on their bikes as they move along on the sidewalk. I guess you might say, if you wanted to look at the rational side, they're raising money for the city, no doubt for non-biker type concerns, but... it looks like to me like a form of harassment, unnecessary harassment for people who are trying to engage in alternative energy forms of transportation. And here's what the flyer says from Scofflaw's Union Local 13. The sort of arrangement is in active use in Amsterdam in the form of subway riders insurance. Riders who frequently jump the gates to ride the subway trains for free will pay a small amount to the fund, and if anyone gets caught doing it, their ticket will be paid for through this fund. The total money spent is less than it would be to pay the fare. In Santa Cruz, we can do the same thing, where bicycle riders can make a small monthly dues payment, the amount of which will be determined by the size of the membership to the Scofflaw's Union Local 13, and have their tickets paid for by the union through member dues if efforts to have their case thrown out are unsuccessful. The union can also advise bicyclists unofficially on how to fight their ticket, and any surplus in the union coffers can be used for such things as lights and safety equipment for members who could not otherwise afford said stuff. If you're interested in this, Scofflaw's Union Local 13, you can write them at P.O. Box 7362, Santa Cruz 95061, P.O. Box 7362, Santa Cruz 95061, or call them at 427-5565. 427-5565. They also have an email address, santacruz@barry.iww.org. Santa Cruz, one word in small letters, @barry.iww.org. And on the other side, there's an interesting announcement of an upcoming critical mass Friday, May 7th, that's tomorrow, at the town clock, 5:30. Spring has sprung, bright green tips shoot from tree branches, flowers bloom, allergies take hold, and bicyclists are still treated like second-class citizens. Come join the critical mass for a celebration of the onset of spring and our collective power to change the world. This critical mass will also mark the inauguration of Scofflaw's Union Local 13, a mutual aid group for at-risk bicyclists. Most of us have gotten a ticket on our bikes at some point in the past. The Scofflaw's Union is being founded for all these people. So come to the critical mass tomorrow, 5:30, clock tower, and bring your spring adornments and some of the other green stuff, too. Oh, dear. We'll be passing the hat for people who are ticketed for last month's ride and collecting dues for people who wish to get in on the Scofflaw's Union. Well, I'd love to see this Scofflaw's Union move into greater, viability, and I'd like to see a busker's union and a beggar's union. I think people essentially have to get together, in particularly down in the lower steps, you know, which society considers the lower depths, because that's how you get some power, is by doing that.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. This is V-Man.
Hey, V-Man.
I heard you talk about the Scofflaw's Union Local 13.
Indeed.
I can, just for the record, I can barely hear you.
I'm out of here. Okay, that's good. I'm glad you're telling that. We have monitoring problems in the studio. Can you hear me now?
Yes, much better. Much
good.
Better.
Okay, excellent.
Anyway, yeah, the Scofflaw's Union, I think it's a really cool idea, and I hopefully we'll be able to find the time tomorrow to make it out to the clock tower. I just wanted to let you know, speaking of bike tickets, I've been given a bike ticket some time ago, maybe January of this year, for riding the wrong way down Pacific Avenue.
Oh boy, ain't it familiar?
Yeah, and one of the things I would encourage bicyclists to do if they find themselves in the situation of getting a ticket and they go to, they decide that they want to fight in court, first thing would be to disqualify Referee Mulligan.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what I did. I disqualified Referee Mulligan. I had it heard by one of your favorite judges, Charlotte... No,
Cloud.
Yeah, Charlotte Cloud, yes. And for some reason, I don't know why, I like the woman. I know a lot of people don't. A lot of people have a lot of problems with Miss Cloud or Mrs. Cloud or whatever her name is. But I like her. She's always been really nice to me in court. And I ended up... What happened was I missed the court date by like a day, so I got a failure to appear, and it jacked the fine up from $103 to $245. Mm-hmm. So what I ended up doing was I pled no contest, and I decided I'm just going to pay the fine, right? So I go to her courtroom, and I plead no contest, and I say, I'll drop, you know, if you drop the failure to appear, I'll plead no contest and pay the fine. She agrees to that. She fines me $103, gives me 2 weeks to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
So the 2 weeks comes and goes, and on the 14th day, I go down to the court with my $103, and I'm going to pay my fine. Well, then they go, oh, that'll be $133, please. And I went livid. I just literally went beside myself and kind of lost it on the poor clerk working there in the courthouse. And I absolutely flat out refused to pay what I consider to be a poor man's tax, $30 for not having money on the day that I was convicted, right? So I said, fine, you know, I'm not paying this, I refuse to pay this, I want a modification hearing. Mm-hmm. I want a modification hearing and I want to request community service.
Mm-hmm.
So she agrees, signs me up, and I got Cloud again. So I went back today, in fact, this morning,
mm-hmm.
and it must have been my lucky day or something, or I think that her courtroom was extra swamped, but justice was served, and I requested, you know, I basically went up there and told her the story. You know, that I refuse flat out to pay this extra $30 poor man's tax. I would have happily, not happily, but begrudgingly paid the $103, and she says, well, what do you want? I said, well, I'm requesting community service. And she asked me how much I make a month, and I told her roughly $600. And she goes, this is your lucky day, Mr. Lombardo. And she sets me off to the side and says, you know, you don't have to pay anything, you're free to go. And I got off without paying a fine. So justice was served for me today. So it does. Sometimes it, you know, a lot of people.
But what are you doing with Cloud in chambers? Is what I want to know.
You know what it is? I think she doesn't like Officer Headley. And the first time I ever had her in court was a trial with Officer Headley, and I won,
mm-hmm.
and made him look like a fool. And ever since then, she's had some sort of weird respect for me. I don't know what it is, but...
Not weird. I think what's weird is when people don't understand that standing up for your rights really deserves significant respect, and it should be taught to people in schools. You know, it should be taught to people at grade one. You don't let police officers bully you. You don't let courts bully you just because they are in positions of power. But it is, you know, it is a struggle. I know that today was a day that Mark Bourne, the man who was beaten by troll busters in Capitola, a homeless man back about a month ago, came to our door all bloody. He has 8 bicycle tickets.
Jesus.
From you know, these clowns downtown who are giving out, going the wrong way on Pacific Avenue. And he's, you know, he can't pay any such fines. I don't know, maybe he'll be lucky enough to get Cloud's court if Cloud is in fact doing this on a regular basis with other people, and that I don't know.
I'm not sure about that either, I don't know, but I feel vindicated.
Well, that's good. You know, just, you know, I want to get some of the photos of you and the judge, you know, preferably in a compromising position. Actually, she's a commissioner, but...
Oh, she still is a commissioner.
I believe so, yeah.
She has honorable on her nameplate now.
Yeah, but she's very wild in her decisions in other cases,
yeah.
I know.
I do know. I mean, she can be rough. I've seen her with other people be real harsh on her sentencing. And
but your suggestion about disqualifying Mulligan is a very good idea. The best place to send the case, although Salazar also goes weird on a number of cases. I mean, he held Brozda in jail for 72 days and... You know, essentially for doing nothing. And, you know, we don't like, some of us, you know, have problems with activist Chris Brozda, who's, you know, sometimes goes bananas and, you know, goes ballistic and can be intimidating and threatening. But at other times, he's simply just trying to be able to sit there and have a cup of coffee and, you know, police amuse themselves with harassing him.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, ratified, I believe, by Salazar. But the thing you do is to definitely disqualify Mulligan. You go down in the basement of the county building any time of the day, stand at the line of the clerk's window, and just go up and say, I don't want Mulligan. I think he's prejudiced. And you have to write out a statement to that effect. You don't have to prove he's prejudiced. You just have to believe.
Just say that he's prejudiced. I mean, right, it's a peremptory challenge. You have that right to disqualify the first judge, referee, or commissioner in any case.
Generally, Salazar is a better bet than most of the other judges. If you know what you, they will tell you what the judge is who's coming up on the case if you disqualify Mulligan.
Right.
If you ask them, you can't choose a judge, but you can, for example, choose to come back another day
and try it again.
And try again.
Yeah, there's a rotation. I think it goes, if you disqualify Mulligan, it goes, like, suppose it goes to Department 1, and then the next person comes in and wants to disqualify Mulligan. That goes to Department 1. And then the next person comes in, then it goes to Department 2, then Department 2 again, and then Department 3, then Department 3 again, and like there's some weird rotation like that, mm-hmm. I was told by a lawyer.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, anything more, any other updates? I know that Vinny, you're leaving town. You're, of course, you have your own show. What day is that?
It was last night, 9 o'clock every Wednesday from 9 till
Rocking the boat.
Hours of the morning.
Rocking the boat.
And again on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I won't be here for the next couple of shows, but I'm going to be working on a tape for this upcoming Sunday, so you'll have a new program at least, and then I believe Skidmark Bob will be filling in for me next Wednesday, and probably on the following Sunday I'll just run an old show.
Any updates on, I know a lot of people are concerned about the fate of free radio stations in California, and when we spoke, oh, I don't know, a couple days ago, maybe it was longer than that, you told me that California still is essentially not cracking down on free radio stations, right?
No, that's true. To my knowledge, there have been no free radio shutdowns as far as seizures go. People have been intimidated off the air in California, whereas an FCC agent will come by and say, I'm a federal agent, you're violating the law, you know, shut down. Like in L.A. a couple months back, I believe October, there was some intimidation, and the woman in charge of the radio station opted, they threatened her with a fine. They never actually produced any paperwork, but they threatened her with a $6,000 fine, or they said they'll drop the fine if she gives over their equipment, so she did. And then there was another, I believe, in Los Gatos.
I think that's called extortion, another
circumstance. Yeah, it is, essentially. There was another guy in Los Gatos visited, I believe the same day, about a year ago, that Free Radio Santa Cruz was visited, and he was intimidated into giving up his equipment as well. Most recently, though, just Monday morning, in fact, in Brooklyn, New York, the radio station, I think it was called WMJZ, they were operating at 89.3 megahertz FM. They were about a 15-watt station, had been seized. A very similar intimidation. The FCC agent showed up to these high school kids doing a show and basically, you know, forced his way in, spent the whole afternoon there, and they didn't take any equipment, I don't think, but they did force them off the air, and I do believe that they're not, they basically got scared and they're not coming back on the air. Also, last week in Houston, Texas, a pretty large metropolitan area, there's a station called Free Radio Houston, or they call it Montrose Radio, because
mm-hmm.
I think that's the neighborhood is Montrose.
Now, is that where broadcaster Reckless has gone? Or
No, she's in Austin. Mm-hmm. That's some good news. There's, as well as the bad news, there's some good news, too. Reckless is on the air now in Austin on 97.1 FM with Free Radio Austin. They've been on the air for a little over 2 weeks now. They're not 24 hours a day, but they're running from 6 to 2 in the morning, I believe, 7 nights a week. And they're offering all kinds of news, music, information. In fact, a lot of our former programmers are there. Little Bear is there. He used to do the Night Train Express on Mondays at Free Radio Santa Cruz. Reckless is there. And I just heard word that the Reverend Michael D'Angelo from about 1996, I believe, he was on Free Radio Santa Cruz for a couple months, and he just resurfaced in Austin, Texas, and he's going to be getting a show there as well. So so maybe we'll be getting some programming from Austin. Also, this week in Baltimore, WMOB went on the air for the first time. They're Free Radio Baltimore. It's like a 15-watt station, and they tested out their equipment for the first time, made a big announcement about it. They're real excited. So, I mean, with all the negative stuff that goes on in this movement, there is a lot of, you know, encouraging things. When more stations come on, it's like we say, you know, for every station they shut down, we should be putting 10 more on the air. And hopefully that will be the case.
Do you have any sense of the numbers, Vinny, of any number of stations that actually do go on the air? I mean, compared with a year ago, are there more or less nationally? Or?
I would venture to say that it's really hard to pinpoint because this movement, this micro radio movement, is so varied. I mean, there's all kinds of different political bents from the programming, and the people that I have contact with around the country tend to be more along the lines of anarchist or anti-government type people. But there are people out there that just want to go on and have fun and play hip hop and play music and do dance hall kind of stuff. And then there's other stations too. There's like a whole right wing. There's a whole bunch of right wing pirate stations as well that are operating without a license, and some have been shut down. But and then there's of course there's also Christian religious broadcasters that don't have licenses. So there's just so many. It's really hard to pinpoint, but I would roughly estimate it to be at least 1,000. Because every time you hear about a station or two getting shut down, you hear about another one that just comes back on.
Well, I know that you were concerned about the National Association of Broadcasters and its pressure on the FCC regarding their new rule concerns. So they're some sort of, give the micro broadcasters a crumb and then shut the rest of them down.
Right.
What's happening with that?
That has been stalled. It's being stalled due to pressure from the NAB and pressure from NPR and other, I don't know about Pacifica, if they've come out against it or for it, but there was a comment period, and it was originally supposed to end actually the 12th of May.
And what was the proposal?
This is the proposal. It's a notice of proposed rulemaking that the FCC issued, which basically means that they're thinking about licensing micro radio, and they are thinking about proposing some licensing scheme from anywhere between 1 and 10 watts, between 50 and 100 watts, and anywhere from 100 to 1,000 watts. And they're calling all these things low-power FM. The thing is that if these stations do become licensed, there will, of course, be auctions for those frequencies. They will probably go to the highest bidder. And, of course, there's also going to be all kinds of fees. These new low, if they ever do establish low-power FM service again in this country, it will be secondary status, which essentially means that, suppose we get 96.3 and we get a license for it, just theoretically now.
Mm-hmm.
And then, some Disney Chancellor-type corporation comes along and wants to put a repeater station at 96.3 for one of their stations in San Francisco, and they want to repeat that signal in Santa Cruz. They would have primary status, and they would be able to bump us right off of our frequency because we're second-class pirates, second-class broadcasters.
So in this situation, the NAB and the National Public Radio, the vanilla stations and the monopoly stations who don't want any kind of decriminalization or actually legalization of micropower are actually serving our interests, because this legalization would actually put us in more peril in terms of needing money to stay on the air.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they pushed, they've lobbied the FCC to push back the comment period. They basically want to take comments from the public up to May 12th, and then they decided to extend that to July, I think. July 1st is the end of the comment period, and then reply comments by August. So this thing is going to go through the works. And if they ever do decide to issue a rulemaking, they haven't actually made a rulemaking yet. It's a notice of proposed rulemaking, so they haven't really done anything yet. They've just made it seem like that to the general public through their media, but the reality is that this thing is going to get killed before it ever happens, because once, suppose they do decide to someday offer us licenses, then they're just going to take it to court, and they're going to fight it in court, and you got people in Congress that are sitting on telecommunications subcommittees that are calling for the abolishment of the FCC, that we don't need it anymore, that they've overstepped their bounds by even thinking about this, and what do we need the FCC for? We could just hire private companies to do this job and keep the law the way it is. And it's I really have no hope to ever get a license from the FCC, and I just wish they would realize that we have a First Amendment right as free people to speak freely, and we can use any avenue, any media that we see fit to speak on, and as long as we're acting responsibly, which we are, we're not interfering with any other broadcaster, we're not doing any harm to anything. What is the deal? What's the big deal? We are communicating, we're creating community with neighbors and friends, and I don't know. It just drives me nuts.
Well, while it drives you nuts, you're pressing on with free radio, and that's what counts.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in, Vin.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Spare some change, I need a bite. Just to survive, it's an awful fight. I spend my time collecting cans while you're out working on your tans on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, slaving on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon, you and me.
And actually already here. Don't have to wait for those lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Just, well, maybe even look in the mirror. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is the last 45 minutes of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, and our call-in number is 427-3772. We are, in fact, going to now play a brief interview I had with Skip Spitzer, co-chair of SCAN, or co-coordinator of SCAN. I may not have the name exactly right. This was at a protest against the bombing at the town clock, and it's a little bit muffled, but bear with us. I think you'll find it interesting. Now, the issues recently for me, as I said before, with SCAN are its sellout on the sleeping ban in terms of the main coordinators, Bernice Belter and Skip Spitzer. When told that the city council was going to keep the sleeping ban, took no significant action in terms of any written material to tell them, don't do it, SCAN opposes this. Instead, they went along with it. They never issued a follow-up letter when we brought their attention that simply saying these crumbs that the city council was offering, lowering the fine, letting two cars park in a business lot, or one car park for 3 days a month in a driveway, were just irrelevant to the basic human rights issue and had nothing to do fundamentally with the human need for a place to sleep at night and for people to be allowed to legalize their own places. SCAN, which for 3 years had said it urged ending the sleeping ban, last year even as a priority action, crapped out on this issue. And I thought it was a disgrace. And I've also criticized SCAN for the Dolphin Lee Project, the Beach Flats proposal that essentially is, again, sounds like another bulldozing, relocation, get rid of the low-income people plan being pushed by city staffers that we thought had been removed from positions of power in the new election, but not apparently. Or apparently not. Anyway, here's the interview.
Still working with SCAN, Scott. I don't have to make you talk with your mouth better.
Yeah,
chilling
here.
Oh, yeah.
So, sure I am.
Has SCAN taken a stand yet on the conflict and the bombing?
SCAN is in the process.
It is like you're eating. It sounds so good, doesn't it, folks? So,
he
actually is an out-of-work actor. We're not going to get into that at this time.
SCAN is in the process of considering an endorsement for the town hall event that is supposed to happen at the Civic Auditorium.
Mm-hmm. You know, when is that likely to happen? Both the endorsement and the event.
The endorsement's going to take a few more days because we're in between meetings and steering committee, so it's a little difficult to make decisions in the trenches. But I expect that the steering committee will endorse it. I'm not sure when it'll happen. The intent was to get something happening within a 1 to 2 week time frame, but that's really up to the people who are organizing it. So, hard stuff.
Now, did SCAN have a pretty quick action on the Iraqi war? Was there a long process of discussion? That was, of course, a decade ago. Do you remember that?
I don't know. I wasn't a part of the organization at the time.
Now, you may recall that a particularly malcontented non-member of SCAN contacted you before the latest yearly meeting requesting that time to talk about the issue of censuring the current city council for its failure to meet up to SCAN's 3-year endorsement of ending the sleeping ban.
I don't remember that happening.
You don't remember that call coming through to you?
I don't remember such a phone call.
You cannot recall.
Oh, you!
Yes. What a memory, man.
I remember now.
Yeah, good.
I tried to repress it, yeah, but I can't.
It came out, it poked right out at you, folks.
I'm not good at repression.
So what happened at the SCAN meeting? Was there an open and honest discussion on the subject, or did it just simply not get talked about?
It didn't come up.
Mm-hmm. So how can individuals believe that SCAN endorses, is serious about its resolutions if it does nothing to ensure that those people that it puts out blood and treasure to elect and then turn around and do exactly the opposite aren't in fact held accountable for what they do?
Restate the question.
No. In other words,
I'm happy to give you an answer, but I'd like you to state it in plainer language for me.
Sure. Well, the request that I made of you actually was of David Silva, who I believe mentioned.
David Silva.
Well, actually, it was of you too. I called you and spoke to you, and we spoke on that afternoon. But
Robert, don't censor this part of the interview.
No, certainly not.
You called me and you asked me if you could put something on the agenda. I told you flat out it had to come from a SCAN member. If a SCAN member put it on the agenda, despite the fact that it was extremely late notice, if there was time, it would be considered.
That is accurate.
I understand that you contacted David Silva. I don't know the content of your discussion, but David didn't bring the issue up at the meeting.
That's true. In fact, Silva told me that he was going to deal with it and resolve it and make sure that the issue in some sense got brought up, and then he in fact failed to do so.
Well, maybe. But, I mean, a lot of people in fact brought up housing issues. And in fact, one of the issues that the SCAN membership directed the steering committee to take on as a priority issue was housing issues in general, with an eye towards the low-income housing project down in the Beach Flats. But it was sort of broadly stated to look into housing questions in general.
I know David felt that it was a victory that he got the sleeping ban. Hey, good to see you. Clumped into the housing complex, and that it was, in essence, kind of, I don't know, endorsed by reference or something. That was, as he put it, it was still on the priority list. Does that in some way cover what... Again, we're slipping from the sleeping ban endorsement to the question I had, which was why it didn't SCAN censure the politicians who betrayed SCAN's trust on this issue.
It's a different question than why did nobody bring it up at the meeting, and that's why I asked you to rephrase the question, because it sounded like two questions in one. If you want to talk about the second question, is why SCAN hasn't pursued some sort of formal censure, the short answer is because
nobody gives a shit, perhaps.
No, Robert.
I'm sorry, I don't want to put words into your mouth, sorry.
It's not that you're putting words in my mouth, it's that you're being rude.
Rude? This is a vicious assault. I ignore that for the moment.
Well, anybody who listens to this can make up your own mind as to whether or not Robert Norse is rude.
And if you make your mind up the wrong way, I am going to
break your legs.
I will simply destroy your radio right now.
He'll write about you. He'll write rude things about you. Now, where were we?
I'm so shocked by what you're saying.
Not because nobody thinks it's important, but I mean, there's a lot of reasons for not bringing it up. You can start with the idea that most people don't interpret the issue the way you do. Most people don't see it as a complete sellout, even though there were, in many quarters was a lot of disappointment about how the whole process unfolded. The other reasons for not bringing it up are that it's not terribly strategic. It's not a very strategic thing to do. I'm not sure that it would accomplish anything given the current local political situation. Given that, I'm not surprised that nobody brought it up.
Uncensored, you heard it here first from Skip Spitzer, one of the... what is your official position? Coordinator, steering committee member?
I'm one of two co-chairs of the SCAN steering committee.
There was also another item that was brought up. David was concerned that there was no real accountability procedures put in place, and that somehow he felt that the SCAN central folks have been scared away from that. I may be misquoting somewhat, but
no.
That's the gist of it.
No.
Don't you blame me, by the way. So you're not the only one who blames me. I want you to know that.
I find that terribly hard to believe, there are other people who have similar thoughts about this.
Complimentary thoughts.
Well, actually what happened, and it's an interesting thing that you bring up, because one of the reasons why I joined the SCAN steering committee is because I was interested in the notion of accountability. And so I became chair of the elections committee before the last round of elections. And we spent a great deal of time working on accountability measures. And over a long period of time, we developed three very good measures. Those were sent to the steering committee, and over time they were looked at. Today, one of three of those measures has been enacted
and
adopted. That measure has to do with the steering committee on an annual or more frequent basis polling its membership about how they feel about particularly sensitive or hot local issues, and then comparing the results to positions taken by elected officials.
So this accountability is sort of an implicit kind of comparison rather than an explicit kick the bums out sort of thing.
Well, it's not a... It doesn't have to do with a recall election, if that's what you mean, but it's not terribly implicit. It has to do with making an explicit statement that potentially scan-endorsed electeds are coming down on an issue in a way that the scan membership feels is inappropriate.
But it's not a specific statement or directive to the members, we want you to act otherwise. It's more, we feel this way, you feel the other way.
Directive to the members?
A directive to the council. The politicians at Scan-Endorse.
I don't know. There's nothing in there that says that it'll be phrased as any kind of directive, and I'm not sure that that really matters. In fact, it's probably least effective to make a public demand in a situation like that than it is to simply make it clear that progressive electives may, in fact, be losing touch with their political base. Well, make a demand. People tend to justify their positions. They've been challenged publicly and they have to respond. But sometimes it's an appropriate strategy to pursue politically, and other times it's not.
We've been talking with Skip Spitzer. Skip, any concluding words that you wish to put forward before I begin my rude and rather vicious assault on your analysis?
Concluding words on...
any of the subjects we've touched on, or subjects perhaps we haven't touched on that you think we should be touching
let's
on?
Let's see, somehow...
You can chew a little at that point. We're doing Joe better.
I've been chewing throughout the interview, actually.
Yeah, I don't mind that, actually.
Final words, censor the tape carefully.
What else would I do? Thank you.